Stories, fables, ghostly tales.
Turn out your light. Turn them out. Ah, have you heard the story? The author of murder, eh? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Hazel Clinton. Well, I'm glad to see you. Come in, sit down. Let me look at you. Ah, it's good to see you again.
It's good to see you again, too.
Only seen you once since your marriage. Where do you and Lyman hide out? How is that author husband of yours, anyway?
Well, it's your fault you haven't seen her. Been invited 3 times, you know.
Pam couldn't get away. Besides, why do you live way out in the wilderness? Hazel, you're not ill. Or are you?
No, Dr. Russell. It isn't I.
Bob. Not Dr. Russell to you, my dear.
It's easier to call you Dr. Russell on a call like this.
What can I do for you, Hazel? Here. Want to smoke? Have a cigarette.
Thanks.
There now.
I came to talk to you about Lyman.
Yes? Ill, Hazel?
It's worse than that. I don't know what it is, but it's something dreadful. Terrible, I know.
You tell me the best you can.
Well, at first, when we moved out in the country, he seemed so happy. He was busy writing a new novel.
And he had you there with him?
Yes. I thought that should make him happy. He'd made me rush the marriage, though.
Married 2 months before you planned to be, weren't you?
Yes. But then, several months after we'd been out in the country, Lyman began to act very strange. Very strange.
What do you mean?
Well, at first I thought it was fear of something. I don't know what. And then he began to sit in the library. All night long.
Writing, you mean?
Some, perhaps. But when he'd come upstairs early in the morning, he'd look like someone who had undergone a terrible struggle, an ordeal. His face would be white and chalky. His eyes would jerk and his lips tremble.
How long has this been going on?
For a month now. Oh, it's terrible. Something's driving him mad. Whatever it is, it'll kill him.
Hazel, I don't know what to say. I can't say anything right offhand. But you know, my dear writers... Well, anyway, Lyman has always been rather a peculiar chap. Normal, of course. Normal as any of us.
He's not normal now. He's changed. He's not the same. Oh, you've got to do something.
Can you get him to come and see me?
No. That's the trouble. I can't. He won't leave the house for a day. I begged him to get out, but he won't.
Tell him you were coming to see me?
Oh, mercy, no. Just in town, shopping.
And you want me to come to him? Is that it?
Exactly.
Without his knowing, I'm making a professional call.
Yes. I want you to come for the weekend, and while there, see if you can do anything for him.
I'm not a psychiatrist, honey. I may advise pills when he needs a change of air.
Oh, I know you. You'll do the right thing. When can you come?
Well, want me this weekend? Tomorrow?
Indeed, I do.
I think I can get away this weekend. I will. I'll be there.
Oh, fine. I feel better already. About Lyman, I mean. I know you can help him if anyone can.
Now, don't put too much faith in a doddering old surgeon, my dear.
Oh, you're the best physician in the world, because I have faith in you. I'll be expecting you for dinner.
Hazel, this has been a splendid dinner.
I've really eaten more than I ought.
Oh, it's nice to see a man relish a meal. Lyman rarely eats.
Going to tell you, Bob, that I have no appetite. But it isn't true.
Lyman, you know it is. Why, night after night, he leaves the table scarcely touching his plate.
It isn't true, I tell you.
Well, perhaps Lyman is more sensible than I am. Now, I know too hearty a meal isn't good for me, particularly at night. I don't recommend it to my patients, but like all who preach, I don't practice my own teaching.
Like the shoemaker's children who go without shoes?
Something like that.
Well, if you finish your coffee, shall we go to the drawing room?
Fine. Now, Lyman, how about telling me about your new novel? What's the theme?
I haven't been writing lately.
But he has to soon. He's promised his publishers that it'd be ready in a month.
Don't remind me what I have to do. I'll have it ready.
I sure you will. With Hazel here for inspiration, it ought to go fast.
Shall we go to the drawing room, then?
Yes. This way, though.
Beautiful here. Beautiful, eh?
Hazel, this is a lovely home you have out here in the country.
I'm glad you like it.
Quiet and peaceful, too. Ought to be a writer's paradise.
Oh, here, Bob, sit in this chair. I'm sure you'll find it comfortable.
Thank you.
Where are you going to sit, Lyman?
If you'll excuse me, I think I'll go to the library. I have some work to do.
Don't let me annoy you, Lyman, or keep you from work.
But I thought you'd like to visit with Bob.
I tell you, I have work to do.
All right, of course we'll excuse you.
Yes, I have work to do.
Will you join us later?
Perhaps. No, don't wait for me. Getting late, I'm sure Bob will want to retire soon.
Oh, but it's early yet, Lyman.
All the same, don't wait for me.
Well, what do you think?
I don't know what to think.
He does act strange, doesn't he?
Yes.
He isn't the same.
No, he isn't.
Changed. I'm so awfully worried. Notice how he glances everywhere and looks nowhere?
I did.
What can be the trouble?
He seems to be listening for something. Waiting for something.
Yes, that's it.
Of course, Lyman's never been very loquacious.
No, that's right. He dislikes small talk.
There's something almost rude about his taciturnity this evening.
No. Oh, Bob, as a doctor, not as a friend, what would you say is the matter?
My dear, I can't answer you yet.
Is it I? Is he tired of me?
No, I don't think so.
But I must know. Notice how white and drawn his face is.
He's under some strain, all right.
What do you propose to do?
As soon as you go upstairs to bed, I'm going to the library and sit with him.
Oh, but he won't let you.
I'm accustomed to giving orders, not taking them.
I know, but you don't
know
how...
He'll let me stay. Did you notice how he kept looking towards the library and yet tried to hide it from us?
Why, yes. Now that you mention it, I do.
I have a feeling that whatever it is that's bothering Lyman, the library has something to do with it. I'll do my best tonight to find out what it is.
Who is it?
It's I, Bob.
What do you want?
Let me in, won't you?
Sorry, I'm busy.
Why lock the door, Lyman?
Never mind. Go away.
Lyman, I'll call one of the servants to open it for me. I'll rouse the whole house.
You can't come in. All right.
Well?
Come on, let a fellow in.
Came here to snoop, I know it. Hazel brought you here to watch me.
And you admit that there is something wrong, Lyman.
I admit nothing. What time is it?
Chimes just struck as I came down the hall. Let's see. 11:45.
Then you must go. Get out of here.
I don't understand.
The door. I must lock the door.
Come on, Lyman. Tell me what it is that's bothering you.
Go. Leave me alone.
No, I'm here to stay.
I have a gun here, Dr. Russell.
But you won't use it. Not on me.
She'll be coming in a moment. She'll try to get out of this room, rattle the doorknob. Try to get out of this library to kill my wife.
I confess I don't know what you're talking about. Who will come, Lyman?
You'll hear her in a minute. Moving out of those bookshelves. Moving towards me. Towards the door.
Who do you mean?
At first you'll smell the perfume she always wore.
Lyman, who are you talking about?
Shirley Gray. Ghost of Shirley Gray.
Shirley Gray?
Ghost of Shirley Gray. She lives in this room. At night, midnight, she tries to get out and kill Hazel.
Oh, now come, Lyman. You've been working too hard. Your mind is weary. Your imagination is working overtime. Better go up and get some sleep.
I knew this would be the way. I knew what you'd say. You think I'm out of my mind? You think I'm crazy? Well, I'm not. You doctors are fools. Can't see. Only measles, smallpox. You only can see something that bats you in the face.
It's only because I can see. I'm asking you to go upstairs and get some rest. No one can go on sleepless for weeks and remain sane.
I'm sane, all right. More than you are. Listen, the clock. It's midnight. She'll be here in a moment. Listen. Listen, do you hear? Listen if you dare. Do you hear her?
I hear nothing, Lyman.
She's coming nearer. I can almost see her tonight. She's dressed in a soft, flowing gown. She's coming closer towards me.
Nearer. Nearer. She's coming nearer. Shirley, I didn't kill you. I didn't mean to kill you.
Simon, what on earth is the matter?
Dr. Russell, don't grab my arm. Let me go. Let me go, I tell you. Let me go. Can't you see? She's moving towards the door. She wants to get out. No! No, you can't get out of here. I'll stop you. No! No, you can't get out that door. Get back. Back into the shelves. I didn't mean to kill you, Shirley. Get back into the shelves. Back, back. I'm pushing her back. I'm winning. Winning. Back. Back into the shelves. Back. There.
Simon. Simon, what is it?
It's all over now. I won. She didn't get out. She's gone back. Now I can go upstairs and sleep. Sleep. I've won the battle for another night. Now I...
Who is Shirley who comes out of the bookies at midnight? Is it someone Lyman killed? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
There are people in most countries who would like to live in the Republic of the United States or the Dominion of Canada, where that good Olga Cole is sold. The citizens of our free countries are the envy of many people elsewhere because of the personal freedom which we have enjoyed. Why, then, doesn't every country adopt a form of free government? One answer is that, unfortunately, there are people and parties in many nations who are so greedy for power that they will sacrifice the freedom of their fellow countrymen to obtain power for themselves. History, even recent history, is replete with such instances. That is why the citizens of the Republic of the United States and the Dominion of Canada must be careful to recognize at its very beginning any movement to steal or limit their freedom. That is not always easy. The man who would enslave a free people doesn't begin by saying, "Now I'm going to be your dictator." Instead, he probably will claim that he is a devoted supporter of personal freedom. But all the while, he will support policies that weaken and undermine personal freedom. Such a man will deny any totalitarian aims. But free citizens must not be deceived by such denial. Apparently, it is a cardinal principle of every sincere totalitarian that he is justified in lying, if such lies will advance his plans. In these times, no public figure and no party or organization supporting such a person can be accepted without careful consideration. Every public figure and organization must be carefully scrutinized. And if their real aims are to limit or to destroy our freedom as individuals, they must be opposed and defeated. Now the hermit again.
The next morning, Dr. Russell talks to Lyman about the mysterious Shirley. Is the doctor talking to a murderer, eh?
Lyman, I want to hear the story. In this clear, clean daylight, I want you to tell me your story.
It's nothing I can tell you.
I'm your friend, Hazel's friend. I can't see your lives ruined, see your whole future shattered. Some strange thing that holds you that, if it were brought out into daylight, would vanish.
You think it would?
I'm sure it would.
It's with me as much in the day as it is at night.
I found out since last night that Shirley Gray was a character in your last novel. Now, certainly, Lyman, you aren't going to sit there and tell me that you believe a character out of a storybook can return to haunt you.
Yes, yes, he does.
It's absurd. Besides, from what I know of ghosts, doors wouldn't bother them. They'd walk right through them.
Not Shirley. She isn't strong enough yet. She hasn't been dead long enough.
And how should she kill Hazel? How do you know she wants to kill her?
For revenge. I killed Shirley when she was still young, lovely. She didn't want to die.
But how do you know she wants to kill Hazel?
Because night after night, she's come to me. Guided my hand while I write. It's written, "I'll take your wife from you, just as you snatched my lover."
Simon, listen to me. Characters from storybooks, I don't care how real they are to you, were never flesh and blood. They can't inhabit a spirit world.
But surely Gray was flesh and blood. I took her out of life and put her in a book.
You mean you used some real girl as a type for your story?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about it, Lyman. Perhaps I'll be able to aid you.
It was several months before I was married. You remember I went up to that lake in the north to write?
I remember.
It was while I was there that I met Shirley Gray. She was the most strikingly beautiful girl that I'd ever seen.
Max, this is Mr. Clinton. Mr. Lyman, please.
How do you do, Mr. Clinton? Shirley tells me you're an author. She's frightfully keen on your stories. But I'm ashamed to say I don't believe I've ever read any of your work.
Oh, don't apologize. Please, I'm the one who should do that. Afraid I write for money, not fame.
Oh, it isn't true. We've had a grand time talking books. From early French beginnings of a novel to modern. From Zola to John de Pastor.
Well, it's nice of you to entertain Shirley, Mr. Clinton. I can only come out weekends. Gets pretty lonely here at the lake with only your folks for company.
Pleasure's been mine, I assure you.
Come on. We're wasting a glorious day meant for swimming. I'll race you to the second sandbar, Shirley.
Right. Want to bet? What a mistake.
Whatever you say.
And so I spent days at the lake with her, walking through the woods, talking, and falling in love with her.
But this Max, who was he?
The boy she loved, was engaged to.
Yes? Go on, Lyman.
In Shirley's company, I could feel myself groping for new thoughts, beginning to live more than I ever had before. She had a free and full imagination.
Yes?
She wasn't muddled by life as most people are. She possessed a spiritual insight, clear, alive.
I understand.
And one night, I told her how I felt about her.
But Hazel, you were engaged to Hazel at the time.
I'd forgotten about Hazel. She belonged in another world. She had no existence in this one.
So you told this Shirley?
Yes. We'd climbed one of the high sand dunes that afternoon, had returned. It was dusk. Shadows had begun to settle on the water. Stars were beginning to fill the sky. And we'd paused to watch their reflection.
You will be returning home soon, Lyman. And so will I.
I shall never leave this spot. Nor you.
Not in mind, perhaps, but in actuality. This lake, the beauty of it all, will be something to remember on cold winter nights.
It's no use to disguise things from you, Shirley. You know I'm in love with you.
I know that, Lyman.
I'll never let you leave me. Never.
I think you will. You understand me. And yet you don't.
Meaning?
That you've read many things into me that don't exist at all. And have omitted one thing. The main thing.
Which is?
That I love Max. Love him very much.
No place for me?
Don't beg. I hate it. With Max, life is easy, unconfused. We're happy on a simple plane. We'll romp through life together and fight together. But not with too much effort.
The easy way?
Perhaps. But why take the difficult? I like life. It's fun. It may be drab and hard someday, but not now.
I haven't misunderstood you, Shirley. Quite the contrary. And I love you.
Please, Lyman, let's not talk anymore. Look at the water. See the boat way off in the distance, covered with a thousand lights, going somewhere. Let's just
That night was the last time I saw Shirley Gray alive.
Yes, what happened to her?
She left the lake the next day. 2 days after, I returned home.
And asked Hazel to hasten your marriage?
Yes, because I wanted to forget this girl as soon as I could.
I understand.
But I couldn't forget her. I couldn't. She was with me constantly. So I began to write a story about her. That drove me wild.
Yet you finished the book? Published it, in fact.
Yes, I finished it. But do you know what I did?
I think I know.
I couldn't bear to think of Shirley living without me. So I killed her in the story. Then the very day that I killed her in the book, she was killed in life.
What?
Yes, killed. In an automobile. Instantly.
That had nothing to do with your story. You wouldn't have blamed...
I was. I fought so hard. Wanted it so much. I brought it about. I killed her. She wasn't ready to die. She won't accept death. Now she comes back to haunt me for retribution. Tell me, Doctor, what am I going to do? Help me if you can. Help me, please.
I will, Lyman. Tonight we shall go to the library together. And I will help you. I have a plan.
I killed her. I killed her.
How do you do, young man? You're Max Pierce, aren't you?
Yes, sir, I am.
I'm Dr. Russell.
Yes, Dr. Russell. I'm glad to meet you. But there's nothing you can do for me. I was in an automobile accident. Smashed up. Always have to walk with crutches.
I know what I'm going to ask of you will seem very strange and personal. But I have a very good reason. Will you hear me?
Well, yes. What is it?
You were engaged to Shirley Gray, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
And loved her?
We were to have been married. I don't understand you.
You will in a moment. Shirley Gray died?
Yes. And I had to live on. I don't want to.
If you're able, your doctor told me I might take you with me tonight to help save another man's sanity. We have to drive in the country. I'll tell you the story on the way.
This is all strange to me.
Now, don't be afraid. It's all right. You come?
Yes, I'll come.
To my car, then. I'll tell you the story as we drive to our destination. That's all there is to tell right now.
It doesn't seem possible.
I'm sane and considered to be a level-headed man. I've never believed in ghosts. Never.
Nor I.
But I'm compelled to believe this time.
But why doesn't she come to me?
Perhaps she will. Tonight. Here we are. It's 11:30. We'll find him in the library waiting. It's I.
Yes? Come in.
Who's this? Who have you brought with you?
Max Pierce. Do you remember him?
Why have you brought him here? Please, Mr. Clinton. I want to help you. And I want to see Shirley.
Perhaps he can talk to her.
You've made a mess of things. Seeing Max will praise her. She'll kill all of us.
No, I think it will give her peace.
She wants revenge, not peace.
But you need help. You can't go on this way.
Sit down, both of you. Be quiet. Listen. Listen. Do you hear that rustling sound? It's the wind in the water. She brings the sound with her. Listen. She's coming. Nearer. Nearer. I can see her tonight. Do you see her?
Yes, I do see her.
Shirley, my darling. Shirley, speak to me.
Max. Max, you've come to me.
Oh, yes, Shirley, I'm here. My darling, I love you.
Do you want to come with me now? Forever?
I do, yes. Surely I do.
But your revenge upon me.
I shall have my revenge. You shall go on living. Suffering for killing others.
Surely.
Don't be afraid to die. Death will be lovely when we are together.
What have I done?
I forgive you, Lyman Clinton. I leave you in peace. Come to me, Max. Follow me.
Yes, Shirley. I'll follow you. I'll follow you. I'll follow you.
The rest of his life. Turn on your light. turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
It was 1 week ago today that Paul and I received a telegram about Papa. And since that hour, my life, my thoughts, my feelings have been deeply altered. I have learned the results of the blackness of terror, the hideousness of sin, and the horror of madness. On Wednesday last, about 10 p.m., a telegram was delivered to me. Who on earth can be sending me a wire?
Who else but your father?
But Papa always calls.
Well, before you open it, we're not going to Blue Acres this weekend. We haven't had 1 weekend to ourselves since we were married.
Oh. Oh, Paul, it is Papa.
I knew it.
No, you don't understand. Here.
Your father's seriously ill. Suggest you come at once. Dr. Lurie.
Papa.
Oh, now take it easy, Marlene.
He's never been ill a day in his life.
Your father's getting along in years, darling. You can't expect him not to have some bad days.
But Dr. Lurie says seriously ill, and he's usually terribly conservative. We must start at once. Oh, please understand me. I love my husband, Paul, very much. But up until the time I married, I had never left my father's side. We'd been inseparable. Ever since that dreadful morning, when as a little girl of 8 years, my papa had taken me on his lap, and after kissing me tenderly and brushing the curls back from my forehead, he had said,
"Little doll, your papa has something very sad to tell you, but you must be very brave, my darling. Your mother has left us. She has written this note to inform us."
"To Terence and Marlene. Life here at Blue Acres has grown intolerable for me. You're a little child, Marlene, and therefore I cannot explain some things to you. But Terence will know why I'm leaving. My little girl, try to think kindly of your mother. I would take you with me if I could, but that is impossible just now. Your father is a wealthy man, and he can give you fine things. I know at Blue Acres you will grow up to be a lady of whom I shall always be proud, and a daughter whom I will love forever."
"Do not cry, my little doll. Had your mother loved you, she would never have left you. From this day forward, there will be no mention of her name in this house. To us, she is dead."
It was some years later that I learned that my beautiful mother had left Papa and me and had run away with Philip Cork, a chap the townspeople said was a worthless dauber in paint. Nothing was ever heard of my mother or him after they left the wig. Nor did my father, Terence Lane, ever mention her name. He devoted his life to me. I had private tutors that came to Blue Acres to instruct me, the very best. Papa imported a master of the piano to teach me. We remained aloof from the world. The only woman in the household beside myself was Mrs. B. Father always did the cleaning of the house, for Blue Acres is filled with priceless treasures. And when I would laugh at him dusting, he would always remark,
"Can't let her clumsy fingers touch this vase. It's worth $1,000 if it's worth a penny."
The years moved on, and I lived in a world of my father's creation, until this last summer when I was 21 years old. One glorious summer night when the moon made golden patterns on the terraced lawns of Blue Acres, and the waters of the colored fountain entered in the ground, shot a million rainbow lights into the night, when the French doors of the music room were opened wide to let the cool night air enter in, I sat at the piano, playing the works of one of my favorite composers.
W.C. Papa was not fond of W.C., and as soon as I began playing, he got up from his chair and went to his study. But the haunting melancholy of W.C. suited me. It was a background to my dreaming, and the somehow lonely feeling of my heart that was growing stronger as the years wore on, with only Papa for my companion. I went on playing. And then suddenly, I was aware of the presence of another in the room. I felt it strongly, even before I turned around.
Oh, please go on. It's beautiful. Suited to a night like this. Please.
I'm sorry, but I don't...
Oh, don't
believe...
be sorry. I'm the one who owes you an apology for my intrusion. I'm Paul Wilde. I'm spending my vacation at the Truesdales who live down the road a ways.
Oh, yes.
They told me there was a princess living at Blue Acres. But they didn't do you justice, young lady. No princess was ever quite so fair or lovely as you.
Please, Mr. Wilde.
The Truesdales also added that a dragon named Terence Lane guards the Princess Marlene with his life.
It was very unjust.
Really? Well, then, if you're not zealously guarded, how about taking a stroll with me? The night is wonderful. And if you're good, I'll reach up and pick you a necklace of stars to wear.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wilde.
You won't go?
It's late.
And Papa would object?
No.
Well, then, with your kind permission, I'll call tomorrow afternoon to gain his consent for a date tomorrow night. Do I have your permission?
Well, yes.
Fine. Then do something for me now, will you?
If I can.
Play something for me as I walk away. Shall we have something light and joyous this time? Something more in tune with the happiness in store for you and me. I'll be listening for our theme song.
Paul Wilde. Only those deeply in love can understand what I mean when I say it was adoration on sight. I knew that from that second until eternity, there would be none other for me than Paul. And true to his word, he was at Blue Acres the next afternoon, asking Father's consent for an evening with me. I didn't hear their conversation, but I did hear from Papa later.
My dear, I'm an old man, wise in the ways of the world. I've spent my entire life protecting you from the vulgar of this world. Worthless. Had I protected your mother more carefully, and there would have been the scandal in this house caused by her treacherous act. I have already called into the city. This Paul Wilde is nothing but a simple clerk with poor wages.
Is there never to be anyone for me?
Of course, when the time comes. But this is not the time.
I had never disobeyed my father, but I did so that night. I sent Paul a note, and we met at midnight in the gardens of Blue Acres.
My Marlene.
Say it again, Paul. It sounds so wonderful. I've never had anyone but Papa speak my name with love.
My Marlene. I have a lifetime of love to give you. A heart bursting with love for you. Do you love me, my darling?
Oh, yes, Pa.
Say it.
I love you. Oh, I love you.
And now say this. I love you enough to leave Blue Acres and marry you, Pa.
I love you enough to leave. Oh, Pa, I can't. I can't do that to Papa.
Must you give up your life to him?
No, but to leave him as Mother did.
Then will you let me go out of your life?
No. No. There were other surreptitious meetings. There were arguments, persuasions, protestations. But in the end, love won out. Paul and I ran away and were married. I will never forget the following day when Paul and I returned to Faith Farm.
What is done cannot be undone.
Papa, you forgive me.
Yes, I forgive you.
Oh, Papa. Paul, isn't he wonderful?
You are the love of my life. And if Paul realizes this, he will not keep you absent from me for any long periods of time.
Of course not, Papa. Blue Acres will continue to be our home. But I hadn't reckoned with Paul when I made the statement. He would not quit work and live at Blue Acres off Papa's bounty, as he calls it. So for the time being, we've been spending weekends at Blue Acres. At this moment, I felt a little resentful that Paul had taken me away from Papa. We arrived at Blue Acres, and Mrs. Eaton opened the door to us, just as dawn was breaking over Blue Acres.
Oh, at last you've arrived. Come in.
Papa.
Your father's a very sick man.
What is it, Mrs. Eaton?
I think, Miss Marlene, you should let Dr. Laurie explain.
Oh, yeah. I'll take the luggage upstairs.
I'll go to Father. You'll find him in his study. Doctor had a bed set up in there where it's easier for me to care for him. Besides, he seems more content there.
Hasn't Dr. Laurie gotten a nurse for Papa?
We tried it, but he wouldn't have one. We'd better knock on the door. Doctor's in there with him now.
Come in.
Papa. I ran across the room to my father's bed. I looked down at him, and then in dismay at Dr. Laurie. But my father's face was a horrible sight, twisted and pulled out of shape. And his eyes, his burning eyes, they were staring at me wildly. I reached out for his hand, cried out to him, Papa! What is it, Dr. Laurie?
Stroke.
Oh, Papa, don't worry. Dr. Laurie will get you well again. Can you hear my voice?
I'm not quite sure this morning, but I think so. He does know who you are. Come outside with me, Marlene. I want to talk to you.
I'm going in the drawing room, Papa, to talk to Dr. Laurie. I'll be right back, and then I won't leave. I won't leave until you're well again. Come in the drawing room, Doctor. I should never have left him.
Fiddlesticks. You did the right thing.
But my marriage has brought this on. He loved me so, and I love him. He's been lost with me gone.
Marlene,
Dr. Laurie, his eyes.
Yes, my dear. I was just about to talk to you of this.
What is it?
I wish I knew. Your father is suffering from some terrible fear that I'm inclined to think is nothing to do with his fear of dying.
Has he said anything about it?
He can't speak. Only the guttural sound you heard. He can't write. He can't lift his hands.
Oh, dreadful.
What that fear is, I don't know. I've watched with him nights, and it appears that whatever causes his wild fear is worse then.
Poor Papa.
As soon as office hours are over this evening, I'll drive out here to Blue Acres. Perhaps between the two of us, we'll be able to discover what causes his distress and be able to help him.
It filled my heart with sorrow to see my father suffering such pain and discomfort. And the look in his eyes, the mad, wild look, was almost more than I could bear. At last night came. I rejoiced when I heard Mrs. Eaton usher Dr. Laurie in. He and I sat by Father's bed while the heavy minutes ticked past. There seemed to be no change in his condition, but as night wore on and it was fast reaching midnight, there was a change in his eyes. The fear in them was so marked that I trembled from it. Dr. Laurie said...
Do you see? His eyes.
Yes.
It's as if he sees something we don't see.
Yes. It was so. His eyes seemed to be riveted on the door to his study. And it was then that I thought I heard a low moan. What was that?
Don't know.
It didn't come from Father.
No. But look at him now.
Now Father's eyes were trailed in closer to his bed.
He was struggling, attempting to lift his hand. It was very plain to me, and I cried out. Doctor, there's some unseen thing standing over Papa's bed.
As the way I diagnose it.
There is.
Something unseen to us, but clearly seen by your father.
And look, the bedclothes are moving, but he's not touching them. What is it? Dr. Lurie, what is it?
An unseen spirit, eh? Witnessed only by the dying. What does Lawrence Terrence Lane see, What causes him to fear so mightily? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
And now the hermit will continue.
Only a few minutes have passed, but Marlene, in her anxiety to aid her father in his terrible fear, only makes matters more difficult. Now it appears that the dying man wishes his beloved daughter out of the room, too. And so Paul, the husband of Marlene, with his arms about her, leads her from the room. Guides her into the music room where she sinks into a chair, sobbing softly. Listen.
Darling, if you get overwrought, ill, you won't be able to help your father.
Oh, Paul, it's so dreadful. I tell you, Papa sees things there in his room. Some vision that frightened him. I saw the bedclothes move and Papa wasn't touching them.
Please, dear, try to control your nerves. Shall I have Mrs. Eaton make you some tea? It'll help soothe you. I'll be right back, darling. Only take a second.
Paul went into the kitchen. I sat trying to get a hold of myself. It was only a few minutes after he'd left the room. Once again, I was aware of the same sound I had heard in Father's room. The sound that had made his eyes turn mad with the terror of it. Was I, too, losing my mind? What was the answer to this strange phenomenon? A sound that to my ears was exactly like that of a woman moaning. At first it was close to me in the music room. And then it grew fainter, but still distinct. And though it's difficult to believe, there was a second when I felt as if something had brushed past my chair, had touched my shoulder. I cried out for Paul. Paul! Paul!
What is it? I'm right here.
Paul, listen. Do you hear a strange sound?
What sort of a sound?
A sound like a woman moaning.
No.
I heard it distinctly. You listen.
Hey, you drink this tea and forget about such things.
Please, Paul, quiet. Now, do you hear?
By George.
You do hear it?
Some unusual sound.
Where is it coming from?
I don't know.
There it is again.
Yeah. Sort of seems to be coming from these walls of the music room.
That's...
Or from out on the terrace.
It's nearer than that.
Here, in this wall behind the piano.
Yes. Why are you feeling the walls?
This panel here. Look.
Why, it's the panel that opens. I've lived here all my life and I never knew of it before.
An inner room in here.
And you can hear the moaning from here much closer.
Marlene, get the candle from the piano. I'm going to look around in here.
Yes. Here, Paul.
Yeah, this passage in here must lead to another room in the house.
I'm coming with you.
And the moaning we heard was from someone in the adjoining room from here.
Paul, wait. Here, look.
What is it?
This enormous chair. Listen. Quick, there's someone inside this chair.
I believe you're right.
Hurry, they'll smother to death.
Yeah, it's locked.
Locked? Someone's been pushed into this chest and it's been locked against them. Hurry, can't you break it open?
I'm going to try. That lock is giving now.
Oh,
Not one skeleton, Paul. Two.
Two.
I'm going to take this chest into Turnslane's room. When I question him and show him what we've found in his secret hiding place, no doubt we'll have the answer to our tragedy and our riddle.
When confronted with the chest and the skeletons of human beings found in it, when asked questions by Dr. Laurie that Papa could answer by a nod of his head, we found the solution to the mystery of Blue Acres. Yes, the skeletons were those of Philip Court and my mother. My father had killed them before they ever got away from the house, the night Mother intended to leave him. Dr. Laurie filled in many blank spaces in the life of my mother and father.
Your father was an insanely jealous man, Marlene. He would allow her no friends. He even went to the city alone and bought her gowns for her. He would allow no one to look upon her. He hated me because I attended her at your birth.
Oh.
I was surprised when he allowed you to get away from him and marry Paul. But I figure that out now.
What do you mean, Doctor?
I found a large quantity of arsenic in his desk.
Great heaven.
I'm sure it was his intention to do away with you, Paul. Then, once again, he could have Marlene to himself.
Take me away, Paul. Paul and I left Blue Acres next morning. Terence Lane, my father, is still living. Mrs. Eaton cares for him. I haven't been out since that horrible night, when the moaning of my mother's spirit led me to her grave. But we will go out this weekend if he's still living. Paul says I can never be happy unless I forgive him. Besides, the eyes of my father show madness in the evening after dark is gathered. So we know he is tortured enough. Each night he must see the spirit of my mother standing over his bed, accusing him of his crime of double murder.
Suffering for his guilt, unable to speak to those who stand beside him. And in the night time, a vision of a woman appears before him. The vision of one whom he murdered because of his insane jealousy. Yeah. Terence Lane has learned during these last hours the blackness, the awful blackness of terror. Turn on your light. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
Characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.